Welcome back to the Mailbag on MTR Network, the Super Tuesday Recap. It's your host, Chris, here with D-Pom. And it is the end of June, which means it's time to talk about some listener emails.
Get into it. Can we get into a little logistical shit? Because I'm noticing something between you and I. Both behind the scenes, like both of our lives are very busy. We work very hard. We have real lives. The end of the month might. We may move this to mid month because we're both exhausted by the end of.
Yeah, oh my god! Like this is like
we're both like, so tired.
I don't know what happened this month, and I think the fact that there's not a lot of emails, and I don't think we have a lot of topics. Like the end of June just like snuck up on me, and I was like, we got to do a mailbag. What the fuck? Like next week is San Diego Comic. I mean, not next week. 2 weeks or 3 weeks is like San Diego Comic Con, and then
it's just the fourth. 2 weeks from now, I'm out of town. And you're in San Diego. I'm actually in Denver, not that far away. And then like it's the end of July.
What are we doing? How did we get here?
Remember when summers? We looked forward to summers as a kid.
Like as podcasters, we're like we don't do a lot in the summers. I'm just like the fuck. I got so good at the. Young Justice Outsiders review we did. I gotta watch all the Twilight Zone so I can do a Twilight Zone premium show this weekend.
Going up recording right after this, and I've got another one recording Sunday night because they moved NBA free agency to 6 p.m. on Sunday. It used to be midnight. Like that's okay. Quick rant. You're gonna hear it again on UD Pod eventually. That used to be the mark of the true NBA head. Were you up when this trade broke? Now. 6 p.m. on a Sunday? Takes are going to be spicy.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on anymore. Like everything, like
I don't like it. I say that much right now. It's all of a sudden the world's gotten a lot faster, and I'm not here for this.
I literally just had a brain fart. I thought today was Wednesday, and could we normally record on Wednesday? It's like it's Thursday. Right. So right after this, like we're doing a short mailbag because literally in an hour I got two movie reviews to do with Brandon and Rose. So yeah, this is a lot going on, folks. So I thank everyone for not really sending a lot of emails in, and we're gonna make it up as we go along with the news stories. But let's just hop into these emails.
Oh, I've got only two things for my reading list. I'm not gonna do the whole thing, but. My pull list, I've got something I finally got to come to grips with.
Okay, we're going to deal with these things. So, all right, first email is from Felix. It says, hi, guys, Felix here. First of all, you have my deepest sympathies for having to suffer through Mosaic, D-Pom. I gave it up after issue one, and the amazing art was enough to keep me. Yeah, I'm
Palm did that, so hopefully you won't have to go through that.
Yeah, I remember, like we said, we were talking, like somebody mentioned that about that. It was like, yeah, man, D-Pom and Chris trying to struggle to remember the name of Mosaic. And I responded, it was so bad. And then somebody like responded, it was like, well, I didn't think it was that bad. I was like, I just refuse to answer that. I refuse to respond to that.
If you say something that I consider beyond the pale, I'm not going to reply. Someone on a platform this week defended Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, I just.
And I was like, it looks like nothing to me, dog. I straight up turned into Westworld.
Yeah, I don't know what this means. My question this time concerns the news that Bendis is bringing back my husband, the one and only 12th level intellect himself, Brainiac 5. Also, guess the rest of the Legion are back too. Okay, seriously though, I cannot tell you guys how goddamn excited I am to have them back, and that Bendis is trying to calm older fans by not saying it's a reboot. Well, all indications point to it being one. Maybe not a hard reboot, but he's changing a lot of stuff around, and I'm here for it all. Go ahead.
A reboot is generally going back to the origins that are already established, making small tweaks. What the Legion has historically done has been a reinvention, particularly this time because they're going to the 32nd century. Just like you, I'm as excited about this as you are. I'm more excited because this, you know what this tells me, Chris? They got a fucking plan because Saturn Girl showed up in Rebirth. In the issue where Wally comes back.
Yeah.
She's in the Arkham, and she says, they think I'm crazy, but I'm just from the future. They call me Satin Girl. And this tells me that this, the Justice League story, the fucking, have you caught up on Doomsday Clock?
No, I was going, I haven't, I'm going to. I know, I've been hearing you.
We've been very busy. Yeah. Doomsday Clock, all these pieces matter to make, they're telling one big meta DC story, and that's why I'm most excited, because it means that Bendis was in all the planning from the beginning.
And that was the thing that I think we were worried about when Rebirth came out. It's like, man, I hope this is not another time when DC gets our hopes up, that they have a plan and then they kind of scrap it at the last minute. But like, you're right. I mean, there's been some delays and some things. Again, we've talked about the Doomsday Clock delays.
Okay. And
let's say we I know what you're going to say, that they were planned. I don't think that.
I'm back on it being planned. After reading the last issue, I'm on it being planned again.
We'll see. Right.
It ties into the end of Heroes in Crisis. It ties into Young Justice. It ties into Justice League. It ties into Doomsday Clock. Like, I'm sorry, Doomsday Clock is an insult. But all these pieces are hitting at the same time. It's to the point where I'm like, okay, they may have been ahead of the game.
Yeah, maybe. Here's my thing though. Doesn't matter. I don't care if it was planned. I don't care if it was accidental. The fact that the things that we thought were promised at the beginning of Rebirth, when Rebirth started, seem like they're not going to be forgotten, which is something that DC usually does, right? DC usually makes all these very big promises, and then when it comes time to deliver on them, they're like, maybe not, right? And so I think the fact that because Rebirth happened, what, like 2 years ago? 3 years ago?
Something like, maybe three now.
Maybe three now? The fact that we haven't abandoned that and we're now 3 years in strong is giving me more confidence. Because again, we were nervous about Rebirth, but then we started reading, we were like really excited about it, and then we were kind of like, but are they going to hurt us again? And so far they haven't, and I'm behind on everything. But just because I'm behind doesn't mean that I'm not excited to see where it's going.
So Rebirth it's the first issue dropped May 25th, 2016, so we're just at like exactly 3 years.
Got you. So yeah, good to see. My question is, how do you think Bendis will be able to handle the future kids? I'm optimistic. I got off the Bendis hater train at the intersection of Naomi 1-5, and man, that book has been really good so far. Granted, it's only focused on one character, but my frame of reference for him is stuff later in his career that folks don't like as much. The first thing of his that I read when I got into comics was All New X-Men. I dropped off after the whole Jean outing Bobby thing, because that really rubbed me the wrong way. I did end up reading his entire run on Miles, Riri, and a few other things here and there, but the stuff with the big cast, I don't know if he can execute as well as the bits and pieces of his old Avenger stuff I've read. If this was Hickman, I wouldn't even have any lingering doubts, but as excited as I am, I'm not sure how this is going to go. What I will say is the lineup of artists is ridiculous. I've already pre-ordered everything, and I hope this ends up being some old faces and plenty of new ones. The less we revisit the same plots and the dynamics, the happier I'll be. I want new adventures and new villains. The Legion fandom has been some of the most welcoming older white folks I've ever encountered in comic fandom, as I've gone through some of the older stuff and talked with folks about it. Would be a shame to start fighting folks if Bendis uses Black Starboy, the best Starboy in my opinion, and folks get mad about something. Already seen some folks complaining about Cosmic Boy's ethnicity change, but so far they're mostly outliers. What would be ideal?
I'll say this. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Historically, the Legion fandom reminds me of the Star Trek one. It's a very much one that exists in the idealized future. And so if you kind of get it from the beginning, you kind of get it. And so I think you're right. Those outliers are going to be few and far between the Legion fandom. Bendis, if you read to him outing Bobby, her outing Bobby, you read to almost the end of his run. So you were there for a while.
Yeah.
And you talk about big cast. All right. I'm about to say this isn't, I don't mean what I'm about to say, but it's a thought that's crossed my mind. Jonathan Hickman writes big casts semi well, in that he picks a character to become his voice, and then everything seems through that prism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, and that's a style of writing that I apparently love, because I love his stuff. But it's very clear that Reed Richards is Jonathan Hickman the entire time.
Yeah.
And so while you say, you know, Hickman writing team books, that's, I see what you're saying, but if you go back and reread in Ultimate Spider-Man. Read the first, call it 15 issues, and then tell me what character you don't know, hasn't been fully developed in even the most sparse screen time. One thing he does with big casts is he makes every panel matter. If you're reading Young Justice, you see that right now. But I would just invite you to, I think you're right, the pre-ordering is smart, get in front of this stuff, because I think that Legion's going to be more important than we thought. And Naomi, I was late. It's fucking great. Go read it.
What would be ideal? What would be ideal is just to jumble together all three iterations and treat folks like K-Quantum with the respect they deserve. Give the POC characters from the get-go and add some more and tryouts later on. Weird aliens are all well and good, but not as the expense, not at the expense of some decent POC characters first. I love the older stuff, but that stuff was very, very white. Couldn't hurt to start off diverse, and I trust Bendis can pull that off. Bendis is a lot of things, but I admire him for being ambitious. Anyway, sorry for the rant a bit. Just really excited to be reading current DC comics again. Marvel has been keeping me fed, but there's nothing like the Legion for me. Have a good one, guys. Felix out. Yeah, thanks for the email. And again, I just know I need to catch up on a lot of. I'm so fucking far behind.
Bendis has really sunk his teeth in at DC. I'll say that his Superman stuff's really good. Young Justice, I'm obviously loving. And Naomi, like, it's one of those books that someone recommended to me, and I forgot to talk about it. I haven't talked. It's one of those books that's just kind of mine that I don't really talk about. Mm-hmm. I just read quietly. Mm-hmm. But I'll be louder about Naomi. It was really good.
Good. Rachel Vison, hey guys, love the show. Vertigo is done, and I wanted to know your thoughts on the imprint. Is Impact in your top five must reads? I'm gonna let you go.
You can't do that if you don't send me the emails.
But you can't ask
me for a list.
I told before.
It's not fair to ask me for a list if I have no prep time.
I know it's not, but here's the thing. There was something we talked about before we started the podcast. I said I wasn't gonna troll you with. I have to give the fans something, and that means I have to do something to make this a regular mailbag. I mean, putting you on the spot is part of a regular mailbag. So,
all right, Vertigo DC Comics. Let's do this. First and foremost,
well, before we even get into the
list,
I was going to just talk about the impact of it. So,
well, I was going to say we'll talk about the end before we talk about the beginning. I get it. What DC's doing now, some are going to say it's negative, and I could see that point because. There was very much, and you and I have talked about this in lots of our DC character corners, particularly Tim Drake. When a book wasn't on the main path, it kind of could do its own thing and be its own cool, weird thing. And Vertigo Comics was the personification of that. It started in 93. It was free of comic code authority. But as the mainstream comics moved away from the comics code, you started to ask yourself, well, what is Vertigo? For me, it's a lot of things, a lot of amazing books. It was a lot of places where either young or established writers could come and scratch an itch that they weren't going to get in their main books. It was a lot of places you could be weird, a place you could tell stories that you could never really tell anywhere else. If you go down the list of authors on who have had notable Vertigo works, it's the who's who of the last 20 years of comics. I get what they're doing. Everything's moving towards this anyway, and they're focusing more on all ages to kind of define themselves. What that means to me is that Warner's taking DC Comics, particularly the publishing side, it's moving them to a more point of prominence for Warner's as a company, because if we're saying that we can maximize the profitability of every inch of this brand, Vertigo is the one where you say, let's roll it in and make it a bigger part of our tapestry than just saying let it stand alone. So I don't love it, but I get it. You wanted my top five, I've been stalling. She has a top five, not top 10, right? Good Lord.
I won't even put you first. Like, I can start, like, imprints were my thing. It's like, if it was a good book, I read it. So I knew about Vertigo. I've read some of the, I'm going through and looking at some of the lists. I've read some of them, but there was never like something that stood out. And I'm with you. It's like, I get that people will be upset about it. To me, as long as there's not going to be a void at DC Comics because of this, then to me, it going away doesn't really mean, is it really going away?
It means less in 2019 than it did in 19. It would in 19.
And especially with the idea of, does the Comic Code Authority really matter? I mean, that was the whole point of it.
When's the last time you saw it on a comic book?
Exactly. So, like, to me, I, and from a brand point of view, I think it makes more sense to kind of, if you have all this stuff, put it under the same umbrella. So you're not trying to, like, I don't know. Like I said, that's just my opinion on it.
So these are not in order. Okay. It's just me naming five, and I'm probably going to name more than five that I just, Vertigo Comics I love. I'm looking through the series Alphabetically, he said easily. Grant Morrison's Animal Man. It just, yeah. Astro City, people feel a certain way, but it moves me still. Obviously, Sandman, I'm 33 and I was a weird kid. So yeah, Sandman. We've talked about Doom Patrol. That was a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
Fables, Bill Willingham, like, yeah, Fables. If anything, Fables and Ferris running from 2002 to 2015.
And just to say this, like, and that was going to be the one I mentioned. It's like we did that. If you're premium, listen to our Fables. Like, our Fables was our longest running comic book club, and I love that series. I thought it was great. It started off kind of like, oh, I don't know where we're going, but then by the end, it's like it turned out really well.
You're invested. You're
invested, and even some of the spinoff series were really great as well. Like, read that Cinderella one. It's like,
yep.
So go ahead.
Sandman, obviously, talked about Preacher. If you ever saw the movie The Losers, the book's done by, I think it's Andy Diggle and Jock, and it's awesome. I'm trying to think of other things I've read here. I need to read more of this Alan Moore Swamp thing. He just weirds me out. Metropolitan. I mean, yeah, I'm that age too. And my favorite book that ever came out of Vertigo is Why the Last Man.
I was just about to mention that one.
It's one of the books I've never reread, and I probably should.
Yeah. Again, another comic book club. We did that on the premium, so we talked about that. It was like one of the first ones. You have to dig for that one.
I reread it for that, and I haven't read it since.
Yeah. So even that was a while ago, but
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, as long as we're not losing anything in terms of being able to tell these kind of stories, I think it does matter. Yeah, we'll see. Like, I get it. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes going forward. Let me see. I got out of my email. Here we go. Here we go. Last email says, Brandon says, I just finished listening to the latest episode of Between Two Palms. I heard that the latest I can send this email is in Thursday morning. So here I am Wednesday night. Thank you.
Damn you.
No, thank you. Thank you for not waiting until last minute. And doesn't even matter to you, because guess what? I didn't forward the emails to you, so
they're all... came at this point, it's immaterial to me. I'm hearing them all for the first time right now.
They're last minute to you as far as you're concerned. I found the NPR network because LeBron took his talents in Miami, which in turn made a 17-year-old me start listening to what was then a local Miami sports radio show, the Dan Lebatard Show, where I was introduced to Bomani Jones, who shouted out Rod, the Black Guy Who's Tips podcast, then introduced me to Twib, where I heard Chris as a guest on an episode. God damn, that's like, man, that's
gonna cool.
Maybe that'll be like a trivia question one day. Like,
LeBron James brought us these listeners. Right. Damn it.
Hey, you know what? That might be the name of this episode. Brought to you by LeBron James.
God damn it.
And I know that.
Shout out to LeBron James, who on this day, right now, gave his number to Anthony Davis. And in doing so, secured a lot of money next year. People have to buy LeBron James number 6 Lakers jerseys. My man plays chess. You got to pay for that school somehow, Chris. Damn.
Hey, listen. You got to play. I'm dead serious. This episode is going to be called Brought to You by LeBron James. let's see. Thank you for all the hard work and consistency through the years. This network has made me rediscover my love for comic books, television, movies, and wrestling. I've been to almost every New York show in the last 2 years, including NXT 25, because I'm a fucking mark. Plus, hearing Susan's husband talk about all the podcasts to come, including a fringe one that probably won't ever happen, makes me even more excited for the future. Thank you for this email, guys. Brandon, thank you. This is a great email. Thank you. I appreciate
that. That meant a lot, man. That was a good email, man.
Seriously, it's like, you know, sometimes you don't have to, even if it doesn't specifically ask us questions about like any of these nerd shows or things like that. Like, emails like that kind of, again, you guys don't understand. You guys don't know, but D-Bomb and I had I literally texted D-Bomb. We're recording at 7. We started recording at 7:30. I texted him at 7:07 going, shit, I forgot that the calendar invite said 7. Dude, can we do 7:30? Because I need to fucking eat because I haven't eaten today. Like, it's been that kind of fucking day. And so, I got two more recordings to do after we finish the podcast.
I've got one more.
Right, he's got one more. So when we get emails like this that basically have people, you know, like saying things like this, like, it matters. It's the one thing that keeps me going and makes me go, you know what? I was tired, but you know what? It was fucking worth it. So, thank you. We really, really, really do appreciate that. And we appreciate your emails. Again, remember, we read these emails at the end of every month. Email us at mailbag at mtrnetwork.net, and we will read it. So, all right, let's get into talking about some of the stuff, some of the little news articles I had, and then we'll get into our pull list. Again, we're gonna keep this kind of simple. The last email kind of mentioned the Between Two Palms episode that came out talking about Endgame. So let's talk about this. Endgame is re-releasing in theaters this weekend, starting tomorrow, with apparently new footage. And so you going?
Of course. No, silly question. I'm not going tomorrow. I think I'm going to – I have a closing at 12, and hopefully I'll be off watching USA and France by 3. So maybe tomorrow night. I've got stuff Saturday and then Sunday, maybe Sunday. I'm going to see it again this weekend because, of course, I am. Are you?
Come on, man. Yeah, I know. Of course. I might go.
I want that record too, baby.
Well, so here, and again, so this is why I put it in here. Cause I wanted to remind folks, cause we're finally starting to see people tell the truth about Avatar. Avatar got the record because it re-released in theaters.
And because you could only watch it in 3D.
Right. And so,
which makes more money per ticket. That's a translator. People,
right. And
that.
So people were going, oh, Avengers is not going to make the Endgame. As soon as Marvel Studios announced they were re-releasing, all of a sudden people go, oh, well, it's not cheating because technically Avatar did the same thing. Avatar originally released in December 2009. It re-released in, I think it was August of 2010. So,
and is this even really a re-release? Because it's still in theaters.
Right. So
this is 9 weeks. This is not, what was that, almost 42?
So again, I talked about this. It shows up as 42 in Box Office Mojo. I'm not sure if it's what they might have done is it might have gotten out of theaters after 12 weeks, but because they re-released it, they count from its original release date, and they count the span, even if it wasn't out in theaters like that. Either way, Avatar made $40 million when it re-released. If you take away that $40 million, guess what? Avengers Endgame already beats. Just from the original run, Avengers Endgame already beats Avatar. So Marvel Studios is coming for that record. And I hope they get it. And I'm going to help them get it by paying money to see that film this fucking weekend. So, absolutely. Yes. I hope they get it. Because it's well-deserved. And again, it's one of those things, like, and I talked about this on the Nerd Off, like, people, like, we like to come back and shit on Avatar, but Avatar was, I think, reminded folks that we can sit there and go, oh, it was just Fern Gully, oh, it didn't really matter. Let's be honest, for a 2009 film, Avatar still holds up visually. There's not a lot of 3D films you can see that can hold a candle to Avatar, even today. And James Cameron is a dick. James Cameron is an asshole. He's a self-important piece of shit sometimes. But that man can shoot a fucking film. And Avatar made his money because it literally was one of those things we had never seen before. So I think, as much as we talk about, oh yeah, Endgame, take the record and stuff like that, to me it's more like a passing of the torch, because what Endgame did, what Marvel Studios did with Endgame, it really is another, you know, defining moment in cinema. You know, Endgame wrapped up a 22 movie cinematic universe that really has never been done before, and might never be done by anybody else, because everybody else is trying to do this and they're not pulling it off. And so, to me, having films that literally redefine what the movie watching experience is, and then have and spawn a bunch of competitors. Let's not forget that Avatar releasing in 3D. And not just the 3D, but the motion capture and the way they use motion capture in that spawned a bunch of other films trying to do that. That's why all these other films were released in 3D. It's why, again, it's not as good as 3D because they try to convert it and things like that. And then all these, it like without Avatar and the Lord of the Rings films with Andy Serkis playing Gollum, we don't get Hulk and Thanos looking the way they do in these fucking films. So, like I said, I think that this is a passing of a torch, and I'm really excited to see Endgame take this new record, because again, everybody's trying to be them. Everybody's trying to latch on. Everybody's trying to do what Marvel did here, but nobody's done it. And last thing on that, the other thing nobody talks about is, not only is it 22 movies over the span of, 10 years, it also involves two different studios. Because Homecoming and now, if you want to count Far From Home in here, are technically Sony films. This has never been done before. And so, it's crazy.
It's, you could almost say, and I'm one of those people who probably judges Avatar too harshly in the light. I'll own that. But I'll say this. You can say, for what Avatar did for visual storytelling, Endgame did for world building.
Absolutely.
Because it was the culmination of everything that's come before in the visual storytelling, in that mocap 3D. I still honestly can't believe they pulled it off. Technology.
Yo, remember.
What Endgame did was say, fuck that spectacle. We're going to give you that, and you're going to care.
Yeah. Yeah. We can now do that and give you the story and the connectivity there going in there. I mean, look, we're saying this about, and you have to recognize it being groundbreaking and changing, because you can literally watch other studios try to do the same thing and it not work. Like, again, we'll get to it in a second, but like, you know, that X-Men movie that came out earlier this year, it's already leaving fucking theaters.
Didn't go well.
All right.
Didn't go well.
And that's not really a cinematic universe, right? It's honestly just a bunch of sequels. All right. And they couldn't pull that off. You know, this is, you know, 22 movies, 10 years, different movies, introducing different characters, telling one story leads to the end. It's literally taking a comic book arc, one of those big giant event books, and turning it into live action movies. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And it fucking worked. And at first, when it first came out, nobody believed it would work. And now it's gotten to the point that now Marvel Studios went from, you know, look at this little studio over here that thinks they're going to do something with everybody else laughing at them, to now everybody goes, holy fucking shit, it's Marvel fucking Studios. And now you get to the point where apparently before Disney was going to approach Fox to deal, people at Fox were wondering, maybe we can do a deal with Marvel Studios and they can come fix X-Men for us like they did Spider-Man. Like, it went from these other studios at one point laughed at Marvel Studios and laughed at what Disney was doing. There was we talked about this before, about how when Disney bought Marvel, people were just like, that's a dumb investment.
Yo, go read the original reviews of Iron Man. Mm-hmm. Go to the critic reviews of Iron Man. Not fan reviews, critic reviews. A new franchise, rusty before it takes off. Look at me now.
I'm just saying. So it's a lot changed, and again, did it in 10 years, which in the film industry is not a long time. You know, there again, Fox took how long just to get these 7-8 X-Men movies out? That's 2 years. That's nothing to Marvel Studios. They did 22 in 10. Like, nobody's working harder and then doing it consistently. And Again, stay away from the internet until you see Spider-Man Homecoming, because you definitely don't want it spoiled for you and things spoiled for you. But when you can see that they put out quality no matter what they do, they're not making any direct money off the box office for Spider-Man Far From Home, and yet they put as much quality, attention to detail, and work into it as they would if they were trying to get $1 billion for themselves.
They let them close this. They let Sony's movie close out phase 3. The epilogue to the story they've been telling for 10 years is being done at cost for someone else. Tell them why you back.
The first hit is free. which leads me to my next email, which leads me to my next thing is, with the Spider-Man movie coming out, it obviously leads to Amy Pascal or anybody who's working for Sony trying desperately to link the MCU to the rest of their bad idea movies. So, everything is possible. Spider-Man Far From Home producer has refused to rule out a Holland Maguire Garfield crossover movie.
I'm not mad.
Speaking to comicbook.com, ex-Sony producer Pascal isn't denying the chance of a live-action team-up where asked to chance of involving trio characters who pulled off, put on the web put on the web mask. There are possibilities, Pascal said, before adding something that's bound to get fans excited about a realistic shot of Maguire and Garfield swinging on by one more time. Everything is possible. This comes with Pascal also trying to go with the idea that, you know, we're not saying... At one point, people were saying that Kevin Feige said that it's possible that Venom could end up in the MCU, but really what he really said was basically like, I'm pretty sure there will be Spider-Man in a Venom movie because, you know, Sony owns both characters, so at some point down the line, maybe they will put Spider-Man in a Venom movie? It wasn't about Venom coming into MCU. And then there was also apparently the word that they originally were thinking about putting Tom Holland into the Spider-Verse. Listen, I'm not mad at what Sony is trying to do here. I'm just too smart to fall for it.
Yo, Holland confirmed the Spider-Verse thing.
No. I get that. I see that. But I'm just saying, Sony's doing all this stuff in the hopes that people will think that their movies, all of their movies, are tied to the MCU.
Chris, I'm about to do 45 minutes on professional wrestling. This ain't the most pro wrestling shit I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, it is. I get it. Like I said, I am not hating on it. I am just telling people, like, don't bring this bullshit.
Just acknowledge it for what it is.
Right. Just acknowledge, like, guys, no. Tom Hardy's Venom is not going to pop up in the MCU. It's not going to happen.
Can I watch that for free anywhere yet?
I don't know.
I'm not paying for it.
Oh, definitely don't do that. Don't do that to yourself.
I'm going to be on a plane soon. I'm going to be on a bunch of planes soon. I'll look into it and see what I can do.
Yeah, definitely don't pay for it.
I'm not. That's on the table.
Yeah, no, don't do that. But yeah, no, look, again, I'm not mad at what Sony's doing here. You got to get in where you can fit in. And I'm not going to lie, I've seen Spider-Man Far From Home. And Pascal's, like, name is all over that thing. Like, she's... I'm not going to
troll you.
I'm not trolling you. I'm not even trying to troll you. I'm mentioning just something. See, why couldn't you just let it go? I'm over here trying to do the... I'm trying to be a
why
good...
Why couldn't I let it go?
Why couldn't you let it go?
Sit in this seat for me one time, buddy. You built this monster.
Oh, man.
Why can't I let it go? That's funny.
Now that's a comedy. going back to this, we were wrong behind Fox's Dark Phoenix debacle. Despite efforts to not reproduce the failures of Apocalypse, the studio's creative team has had trouble selling the vision for the finale. Definite awareness of Rocketman is higher than the X-Men movie, you know you're in strange territory. You think?
Yo, I love that. We didn't want to be the mistakes of the past. That's like someone who got drunk. Last weekend I got drunk and I pissed myself. You know what's not going to happen again? I'm not going to be drunk and piss myself. What's that guy do? He gets drunk and pisses himself. That's what the X-Men movies have been. A drunk person peeing themselves.
Yo, we're not going to make the mistakes of the past, so we're going to hire... Like, no, so taking your analogy there, I'm not going to get drunk, and I'm not going to piss myself and get drunk anymore. But what I'm going to do is I am going to go to that bar I was at last night where I got drunk and pissed myself. But I'm not going to drink. That's what they did here.
I'm going to drink, but I'm not going to get drunk.
Yeah, it's like you literally...
So this is the thing I said. I think I said in the Facebook group. Kinsberg isn't the problem. He directed a terrible X-Men movie. So did Brett Ratner. So did Bryan Singer a couple times. It happens. The problem is the system that allowed him to ascend to the director chair for the first fucking time ever.
Well, so there's a little bit of there's that's the thing. They've been trying to sell it's his first time ever. But you got to remember, this is a man who finished a Fantastic Four film. This is a man, apparently, you're finding out.
Oh, there's a sterling mark on the resume.
Well, they're also, like, this is a man who also apparently, because Bryan Singer stopped showing up on the X-Men Apocalypse set, he also finished the X-Men Apocalypse. This is just the first time. It's not the first time he's directed these films. It's the first time that it's been so, that like, he can't blame anybody else. Because he's also been writing.
What happened? The class got a substitute teacher, and they realized they could run roughshod on him. Like, no, bring back the sub.
Right.
We're not going to work. Right. Bring back the sub. Watch a movie.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And so there's just so many things of them blaming, James Cameron wanted to lead it, didn't want to lead it in the February, in the summer spot. So we had to take
all the false narratives out there. You're going to hide behind a lead a battle angel that nobody saw.
See, that's my thing. And that's my problem with this. It's like, it's been nothing but finger pointing and blame when it's all of you all. Everyone from top to bottom, outside of the cast, right? From top to bottom, the decisions they made, because they and it started with them hiring a man who started by banning comic books on his set. And once you start to that point, and then you start believing that it was good enough, and that's all they had to do. And I think that going back to what we were saying about Marvel Studios changing the game, I think that's another thing that is going to be a subtle thing that Marvel Studios has been doing that they don't get enough credit for is not resting on your fucking laurels. Not resting because you made $1 billion off of Avengers, right? What do you do? Oh, we made $1 billion off of Avengers, and then we made another $1 billion off of Iron Man 3. We could have just kept making Iron Man fucking movies.
Mm-hmm.
And kept making, I mean, we obviously keep making Avengers movies. We could just kept making Iron Man movies. No. They started taking chances. We went out there, we put in Black Panther. We did Captain Marvel. We did Doctor fucking Strange. We did the Guardians of the goddamn galaxy. And they kept improving. They kept changing. And even when they did one good film and it worked here, it's like, let's try something different. And maybe something that didn't work this time, let's try it again. We're not going to completely abandon it. They keep innovating. And when you look at what happened with Fox, like I give, X1 and X2 for their time were good enough. I don't think we could have gotten better at that time.
Correct.
I don't. But once you start seeing and start getting things changing and you start seeing that you can do better and maybe we should do better, in the end, they just kept going back to the same people who got them in the place. Like, again, I have my issues with First Class, but at least Brian Vaughn tried something different there. And that's probably out of all the films that came out, it's the one film that looks different than anything else they've done. But after that film came out, what did they do? They went right back to Bryan Singer, who went right back to, let's connect Days of Future Past to the original cast. So you're, instead of trying to innovate, instead of trying to change, instead of trying to break new ground, you literally just went back to one and the same. People go, whoa, they did innovate with Logan. No, all they did was make the same fucking shitty Wolverine film they made two times before. They just slapped an R rating on it and tried to make it seem like they were different. It's not technically a better film or different. It's not innovative. You know what was innovative over at Fox? Deadpool. You want to know why it was innovative? Because they had nothing, they really had nothing to fucking do with it creatively.
At all.
And you can tell. You can absolutely tell. And that's why. So, it's been in the theater for 3 weeks. And they're pulling the plug on it. According to Exhibitor Relations, Dark Phoenix will lose over 1,600 theaters in its third week. Fucking ridiculous. Last weekend, X-Men Dark Phoenix, which I believe would have been its second weekend, only made $3.6 million in the North American box office. The movie's total gross currently stands at just over $60 million, which is a very lackluster blockbuster with an estimated budget of over $200 million. Again, just like Sony in those Spider-Man films, you spent $200 million, and I honestly don't know where you spent that $200 million at. I have no idea where that money went to. And that excludes marketing, which they didn't really market it like that anyway.
No. Well, they did, because they had to do it three times.
Right. Again, I don't know when the X-Men will come to Marvel Studios and the MCU. I'll be ready when they do. I'll be ready when they do. I don't. Just that's fine. When Marvel Studios is ready, I'm ready. And let's get it done. So, let's see. We talked about this already. So we haven't talked about this. We've been watching Young Justice. I'm all caught up, waiting for them to drop part two of season three.
Easy day now.
Right. And I'm waiting for this because there's all this talk about whether WB is going to shut down DC Universe and whether, because, you know, there's all, they dropped Swamp Thing and then they canceled it or whatnot. I don't know what's going on with the Swamp Thing thing. I kind of stopped caring. Her Swamp Thing was good. There's now talk that maybe they're going to do a movie with it. I don't know. Here's my thing.
There's always talks.
There's always talks. I think in the end of the day, I think DC Universe is always going to be kind of short-lived anyway. One, it's kind of hard when you name it DC Universe and you also have an online game called DC Universe Online. Like, why would you use the same fucking name for that shit? Whatever.
That mistakes were made.
Right.
Mistakes were made.
But here's another thing, too. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about with the Vertigo thing. You know, remember, DC has Warner Brothers. It sometimes can get very hands on, and if Warner Brothers and Warner Media is doing their own streaming service at this point, I kind of don't see the point of DC Universe, you know. And for the little bit of content they have, and quite frankly, it's a little bit of it's a little bit of new content they have, right? Sure, you can get the animated movies when they drop. And you can get access to the old things. Like, if you ever want to go back and watch the original Flash show, I think that's on there. Or watch, you know, Superman the movie, you can go watch that. But at some point, if you're going to justify me paying that money, and let's say I'm not a comics person, because for me, I'll get it for the comics. They need to fix it to make it more of a comics app. And it definitely is built with TV and movies and that kind of original content in mind first. But let's say I'm not into comics, and I'm just getting it for the streaming stuff. At some point, you know, you don't have enough content there to justify me paying $7.99 a month.
If you have the flu for a week, you can crank out most of that network.
Right. Right. I mean, so, you know, and I think and this goes to a larger discussion that we're not going to have here, but just about all these studios and networks trying to make their own streaming services. Again, yeah, sure. I'll buy your streaming service for CBS. When Star Trek Discovery is on, and until I finish binging Twilight Zone, and then I'm going to cancel. And then I'll come back on one of those free trials when Star Trek Discovery comes back and watch it, and then I'll cancel again. Like, you can't just survive off of one or two handful of shows. CBS All Access really helped with Star Trek Discovery because they're getting kind of subsidized by Netflix. But, like, I was seeing somebody like, NBC is going to start their own streaming service. I'm like, and show what?
Right.
You really think you think that's going to work? Okay. All right. You know, Netflix already transitioned to the idea of moving to original content anyway, where Netflix is dropping something new every fucking weekend anyway. So they don't need your stuff. So I've seen people talk about The Office is leaving Netflix. Oh my God, I'm going to cancel my company. No, you're not. No, you're not.
Let's not minimize the loss of The Office. You did.
Well, no, just, I'm not. Well, I mean, it's
be sensitive to some people in their time of loss.
I get it.
Right.
And it's not coming until like 2022 anyway.
How about you relax?
Just saying.
And not tell me how to grieve.
Just throwing it out there.
It's a process.
I understand. So, but yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what the future of DC Universe is. I'm tired of just even speculating with this. I'll tell you one thing. Another reason why I'm tired. We're in the middle of getting our flux of San Diego Comic-Con press emails. And I'll tell you this much, Titans is coming back, and there's some other shows, like, you know, there are other shows that are on DC Universe that are there. I know they're still doing that Stargirl show, I believe. It's still in the works, so I don't know. Maybe that's all that stuff transitioned to WarnerMedia. Maybe they cancel it. Maybe they turn it into limited run shows. I don't know what happens with it, but yeah, right now DC Universe has most of their catalog on there, and that's what I've been asking for a while, and I think it's the same price as Marvel Unlimited, so I'm happy. Like, just make it more easier for reading comics and go from there. And all right, so I got a little bit of minutes left before, and we'll talk to you about what you're reading. My last thing here, and this is a kind of a follow up from the last episode we did, where I said not to listen to anything that's on Bleeding Cool. But then I have an article here where I feel like we should listen to what's on Bleeding Cool. So I know I'm contradicting myself, but I had to throw this out there because we've talked about this man before, and you know, if it's not the co-creator of Spawn, I mean the co-creator of Venom, then it's the man who can't draw feet. And the article is Rob Liefeld quits Twitter following DC tweet controversy.
Wait, what? He quit Twitter?
I don't know if he's gone completely now or if he no, he's back. He's back. This was earlier in the month, but he had tweeted out, he must have deleted the tweets. He deleted the initial tweets. It says, DC Comics is going to drop off a cliff here real soon. Got to get my popcorn. I ain't never seen a company in so much disarray as DC Comics. Thank God they have Batman to actors. They're Tylenol, aspirin, laughing gas. More Batman will fix it. With a laugh emoji. Yeah, just wanted to throw out there. Rob Liefeld is I'll tell you, at some point we're gonna get him and Todd McFarlane together, and the world's gonna explode. Which, by the way, Todd McFarlane is I think he's drawing or is he writing Spawn 301, I think, or something like that. So, hey, what is that sigh for the co-creator of Venom, sir?
I'm not speaking here.
Show some respect for your elders, okay?
I'm on this. Wow, this is horrible. I'm on this article. Like, I'm just.
Are you seeing the article? You're finally seeing the Rob Liefeld article? Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. Like, I'm just slowly scrolling. So I remember the DC tweets because I made fun of him that morning.
Yeah.
And then, like most things in life, I did not think about it again. This is goddamn hilarious.
Yeah, it is. He kind of went a little bit.
A little bit?
A little bit.
And, you know, shout out to Rich Johnson and his crew of Merry Maniacs over at the Bleeding Cool. I hate their website. I hate everything they do. But they did a good job here because they didn't just expose him for the tweets. They linked him to all the other shitty things he's done on social media in the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tweeting DC Comics on Instagram after claiming that his editor had a small penis. I had forgotten that he did Savage Hawkman. Thank you for the reminder, Rich Johnson. Your website's a sis. Yeah, that's horrible. And he also bragged about how many cameos he's done, which he records a personalized message. Guys, someone's got to get Rob Liefeld. We should take up a collection to get Rob Liefeld to read a prepared statement that I've written for him.
God, I love this dude. Like, I mean, again, where would we be without the comedy of Rob Liefeld?
He is literally capitalism given flesh.
Yes. Yes.
Just taste it. I hate it.
All right. Before we get out of here, you want to talk about your pull list or just one thing?
All right. I don't do this normally. I'm not talking about the whole pull list. I'm talking about two things. We'll start with the thing I've been wrestling with. So you guys know I don't talk about books I'm not reading or books I don't like. I just don't do it. I think it's yucking someone else's yum. I think it's unfair. And particularly the book I'm about to mention, I wanted to give a real good chance because I was in love with the previous iteration. Chris can tell you, anyone who listens to this network for like the time can tell you, I was the biggest Hare Krishna convert for the IDW first run Transformer books. I loved them. We're like 8 months into the new run. It's not good.
That's the point.
And it's paced, and I get the idea of what the authors are trying to do. It's just not working. We're in like issue, I want to say 8 or 9, and Chris, when I tell you, nothing has fucking happened. My favorite Transformers book is a book that's essentially a sitcom on a spaceship. I'm willing to accept that. Where nothing happened. Like, at one point, one of the characters jokes, like, why do we even have alt modes? We never turn into them. Because all they did was talk. But that talking was entertaining, and it grabbed you, and it pulled you in a world you wanted to know more about. This does none of those things, and it makes me sad. I don't say these words lightly. I say these words as someone who scoffed at the Siege Transformers toy line when it was announced and now own most of them. It's not a good book. And I hope it turns it around, and I'm not going away. I'm going to keep buying, keep reading, because hell, I read Mosaic. I'll read this. But yeah, I haven't talked to anyone about this. This is a lot. And I say that to say this. Jason Aaron's War of the Realms number 6 dropped yesterday. And Chris and I, on this podcast, on a comic book club where we did Thor, I've talked about it on Between Two Palms because Susan and I are actually reading the entire Jason Aaron run. We just finished the God Butcher arc, and she's like, what's next? I'm like, this is a great reaction. So that's going to be some Between Two Palms content coming up. But the ending of the War of the Realms. Jason Aaron has one more issue of Thor left proper, and then 3 issues of a King Thor miniseries to wrap up his entire run. So you're looking at 4 issues left. That is long-form storytelling. And I know kind of, and I'm going to juxtapose this with the Transformers book, where I think they're going for the same thing. I would argue that particularly with a franchise and property as popular and long-lived as Transformers, you don't need to slow roll an introduction. The opening to Jason Aaron's Thor is a time travel tale with 2 other Thors and someone who wants to kill every god that's ever existed. They start big. There's a lot of hand-holding going on in IDW with the Transformer book. And as I look at the wrap-up, and if you've read War of Realms 6, at DPalm66, I'm very willing to talk about it. But man, just beautifully done. Russell Dowderman, Essad Ribic, Jason Aaron, everyone on the art team, everyone on the editorial, they fucking did it, Chris. And I cannot wait for you to catch up, because you and I are going to do a Thor addendum where we just cover Jason Aaron's run. And my nigga.
I can't wait.
Oh, I can't. I'm so excited for this reread with Susan that I can hardly put into words. It's so much fun because she's never read them. She's never really read comics, so this is kind of deep in stuff. But she survived the God Butcher, so I know she'll be fine going forward.
Mm. That's great.
Also, brainwashing works, guys.
I'm
telling you.
All right, like I said, you got anything else?
No, we're very tired.
I'm so tired. I got like at least another hour, maybe 2 to do. So I'm very, very exhausted. But I think the next mailbag should be a pretty big one because it'll be after San Diego Comic Con. So strap in, and let's see what happens. So again, make sure you guys can follow us on our Comic Con coverage when we go there. It'll be mtrnetwork.net. There's a Comic Con Central page. It will be putting all our content up there. So just stay tuned, and folks, thank you guys very much for listening, and we will be back end of July. God, I can't believe end of July already.
Any second now.
Where did the 7 months go? Anyway, all right, thank you, folks. Thank you guys very much for listening. Until next time, we're out of here. Peace.